Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings, welcome inside hour three of the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. Happy Star Wars Day. May the 4th, Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. And, you know, it's really funny, Mike, because you know me. Star Wars is so big in my house and everything else. But, you know, Star Wars Day hits today. And it's just one of those times when I realize, you know, and they have a new show coming out on Disney Plus tonight, which is great. You know, it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But it's very weird in that when the Star Wars excitement came out, when the three sequels came out the past few years, and we were excited to go, and Zoe was excited. She dressed up like Rey. We went to one of the movies. And, you know, and they were fun, and they were good movies, and we liked them. You know, but clearly it's not the same type of thing as it was for Rogue One or for Solo or for, you know, the original trilogy. They're still trying to recapture that magic. And I sit back and I look and I go, man, the difference between Star Wars and the MCU is just, you can't even compare it. I mean, there's nobody who walks around saying, boy, the MCU, these movies are terrible. Right? I can't believe they put this piece of crap out there. I mean, now there's certain movies that are better than others, but the MCU is the Star Wars of this generation. Right? Like when Zoe grows up and Maddie and Eleanor and, you know, your kids and everybody else grows up, they're going to grow up going, yeah, Star Wars was cool, but man, Marvel was it. And they're going to think of Marvel like the Star Wars universe, except the best thing about Marvel is that they have a million stories they can tell. And as long as they keep throwing strikes, which is what they've been doing so far the past 15 years, I mean, this is not going to slow down anytime soon. Forget about worrying about when a Star Wars movie is coming out. It's look at all these weekends when a Marvel movie is going to be coming out. I mean, they put out their big trailer for the next year and a half yesterday, and it was, you know, every 2.5 months is a big event, and it's a build up to it, and then you're breaking it down, and every day stuff is written about it on the internet, and what's going to happen next. And now it's the big story is, whoa, is Brie Larson in trouble as Captain Marvel? The movie's The Marvels and not Captain Marvel 2, and is she really going to be someone they should go forward with in the MCU?
Here's a hint, they shouldn't.
Leave her alone.
There's all sorts of things happening, and it's a constant, it's a daily thing. You can read great things about Marvel every day online. Interesting things that I can have conversations with my daughter about, and our family talk about them. We talk about Marvel all the time. It's just like it was when we were kids for Star Wars.
We were talking about finance today, and politics.
Really? Yeah. Politics, finance, really? I worried about investments.
We did talk about investments a little bit.
Okay. Okay. All right. Do you get into a little Dogecoin, Bitcoin, different things, you know?
Well, I mean, we talk about how we work, you know, as hard as we do. But the goal is also to save some and invest some and take advantage of opportunity. Much like Marvel is, how many more movies? I mean, then they just do a 2-minute clip. Here's the 10 things coming out in the next 18 months. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. Whoa.
Yeah, it's look overload. At all these things.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If Lucas had just been smart and kept his foot to the metal while the iron was hot, then perhaps the universe would have changed. And if he wasn't a controlling guy. Right. Obviously, you created it. But here's the thing. Now you got to collaborate. And eventually he took his billions of dollars and he still complained about whether it was like, no, you gave it up. Get out of the way. They're trying to do interesting things with your source material, which is why you had all these people writing fan fiction, because you stopped producing.
I thought I could do that. That's my legend. No, no, no. We want more. We want to find a way to make more money out of these things.
But that's the thing. It was a great backbone, right? I mean, a big blueprint on your wall. The problem is he couldn't write dialogue, but he went away from it. And that's fine, did his personal life and whatever else, but was still dabbling, still talking about it. And, you know, the visions of this 9-part opus And then you have The Phantom Menace comes out. Great time. Greatly anticipated. It ages better. Like, you know, that's the thing about all the Marvel movies. Even if they were hated when they came out or misunderstood. Look, Ragnarok's now one of the most beloved in the whole Marvel Universe canon.
Yeah.
But when it came out, nobody understood what the hell was going on. Like, this is weird and different. Like, Dark World is still its whole other place, but Ragnarok is now celebrated. It's like, how do we get more of that?
Right, because it's fun. They figured out Thor. Thor was really boring, and now it's like, wait, Thor's funny. Yeah, this is a funny movie. And now Taika Waititi is in charge of Star Wars. Like, hey, bring that magic here, well, man. Between, we need some more fun.
But yeah, him and Favreau. Well, yeah. John Favreau is a magician. I mean, you saw what he did with Iron Man and getting all that started. And then The Mandalorian, you've at least got that pulse.
Yeah.
So I want to watch this animated thing. This will be cool. Get some fervor.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying Star Wars is done, but clearly the canon of, hey, Star Wars comes out, we're the biggest, baddest, you know, bully on the block. We're the 800-pound gorilla, right? I mean, this is us. We're coming out. You're getting out of my way because we're just going to kick your ass. And now it's, oh, yeah, Star Wars is coming. Yeah, but we're okay. Now Marvel is, oh, it's everybody has to watch out for Marvel. And it shows no signs of stopping.
No.
And that's the thing. Phase 4. I worry that it might get messy. This whole multiverse thing could make it really messy. And it suddenly looks like an X-Men movie. Wait, so they're back in time and who's alive here and who is this and who is that? So I'm a little worried about that. But they've been, like I said, they've been throwing strikes so far. And look, they made Ant-Man work. I'm like, if they make Ant-Man work, there's nothing they can do. And Ant-Man turns out, those are two of my favorite movies.
Well, you got Michael Douglas and you got Michelle Pfeiffer into the mix. Come on now. It's going to be great. Oh. And then you saw what was supposed to happen at the end of WandaVision that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty big story that was circulating today. It's like, whoa, that's beautiful.
Wow. So happy Star Wars Day. This is what happens. This is what happens, Larry.
It's beautiful.
This is what happens when you let Marvel Cinematic Universe take over. But happy Star Wars Day. There's still a lot of good things on the horizon.
I'm watching, I got Return of the Jedi on one of my monitors right now.
Nice. Very good. Okay. All right. Nice. There you go. Okay. Keep that flame alive, my friend. Keep yourself alive. Keep that.
Hey.
Tonight in the NBA, we saw what could be another MVP performance. Here's a hint, it wasn't. From Steph Curry. He had a huge night tonight against the Pelicans. 37 points for Steph, and a lot of the points sounded just like this.
Curry, crossover dribble. Takes a teardrop high in the air over Hayes. I mean, he really had to get it up there and knocks it down, makes it 92-86. Curry now with 37.
Warriors Radio Network, that was Curry's last points of the game. So the MVP, was he the MVP down the stretch? Well, here's how the game ended for Golden State and Steph Curry.
Out of bounds on the fly, you hear the horn. This one belongs to the Pelicans. And with your season literally hanging in the balance, the Pels go on a 25-10 run to pull it out and defeat the Golden State Warriors.
Pelicans Radio Network on the call. It was a night ago. The Warriors thumped the Pelicans by 15. Tonight, the Pelicans return the favor thanks to 33 points from Zion. No, I'm just kidding. He had a good night. But 33 from Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, no, that's why you got to do the double tank. Look, Steph didn't score in the final 6-10.
MVP, buddy. Steph's the MVP. Oh, wait. No, that's something bad. MVPs are supposed to score in the final 6 minutes. Got it. I got it. Look, it's this simple, right? Steph had a great night, but didn't score a point in the final 6 minutes. As a result, the Warriors lose to the Pelicans, who are on the outside of the playoffs looking in. They got to win almost every game the rest of the way and hope somebody really goes on a bad losing streak, right? That's how they got to hope to get in. And still, it might not happen. The Warriors are 500. For all of Steph Curry's heroics this year, for all the points he's putting up, they are 500. They are tied for 8th with Memphis. All right? They're a game away from being in 10th place. Likely they're going to make it into the play-in tournament because they're 3 games ahead of New Orleans with 6 to go. All right? So even if they go 500, Pelicans got to win all 6 to get ahead of them. So the Golden State Warriors are going to be in the play-in round of the playoffs. And that should really end the conversation for Steph Curry MVP. As good as he's been, win. You can't be the MVP if your team is in the play-in round. All right, they could finish as low as 10th, and that's not really in the playoffs yet. All right, because they made this up this year. We're going to do 7-10. It's a great idea. I love it. Well, I mean, LeBron doesn't love it, and neither does Luka, and neither does Mark Cuban. But it's a great idea. But still, I can't reward a guy and give him the MVP when he's in the play-in round. If the NBA wanted to make a rule saying to win the MVP, you got to be in the top six, hey, I'm with that, because that's what MVP is. It's not player of the year. It's not flashiest highlight of the year. It's not, here's a guy with the most threes of the year. It's not, boy, isn't it fun to watch Steph MVP? No, it's MVP. What player is the most valuable to his team and has taken them to big heights in the regular season? That's what the definition of being an MVP is. And as many points as Steph has scored, they're a 500 team. They're 500. He didn't score in the final 6 minutes tonight, and they lose a game to the Pelicans, and now they're at 500. I mean, this is where, and there's no way they're getting higher than eighth because Portland is four games ahead of them. So the best the Warriors are going to finish is eighth place. If the best you're going to finish is eighth, I can't give you the MVP. There's other guys who have played and had, had just as good seasons that have their teams higher in their conferences. Nikola Jokic has the Nuggets 22 games over 500. And this is without Jamal Murray the past couple of weeks where they've lost one game. Okay, he's had them up there. He is having a tremendous season. Julius Randle with the Knicks in fourth place. Without him, the Knicks wouldn't even be sniffing the playoffs. They're nine games over 500, okay? Nine games over 500. Joel Embiid and the Sixers are at the top of the East. They got a game and a half lead on the Nets. Right now, they have the inside track to winning the East Conference. What's the difference in this team? Joel Embiid and what he has done stepping up this year. Those are just three guys I've told you that you don't even have to have your team at number one. I'm not saying there's got to be, it's got to be, you got to finish first or that's it. But you got to have some kind of regular season achievement. And I'm sorry, squeaking in the play-in round is not enough. I mean, that really should be enough. As much as everybody loves Steph Curry, and I get that. His image is fantastic, and you don't want to say bad things about Steph because, oh, you shouldn't be able to. He's a great superstar. He does a lot of great things. He's popular. He's terrific. But really, when you talk about where he's at and Steph Curry and everybody, they're going to be in eighth. They're going to finish eighth. And that luckily, they could finish 10th. But the highest they're going to finish is eighth. I can't give a guy an MVP for that.
Well, it's a fantastic year. There's no getting around it. And what, they're plus 18 wins over last year. So yeah, they're back to normal. But that's it. They're back to normal. And they're an also-ran team. And like you mentioned, we could go down the list and make arguments for a number of players. I've done it with the win shares. You know, Jokic is standing atop the mountain. You may not like it, but that's just the way it works. He's not going to be in the highlight reels necessarily as much. And it takes nothing away from Steph Curry, the player. It's just we're putting a spotlight. And some of this is, you know, this is now your crusade because KNBR hates you. But it's to me, the idea of let's be realistic about these awards. You know, those things and medal stands, you know, and the, you know, Mount Rushmores that people love to do and then have, you know, hours of calls or whatever. That's great. That doesn't mean a lot to me. You know, did you win? Did you win consistently? Did you play great? And I like watching careers evolve. And Steph's been a lot of fun to watch. People keep bringing up, well, it lets guys like you that are 5'7", you know, you relate to him. It's like, no, he's still 6 feet. He's still a giant to me. After 6 feet, they're all the same, right? They're all big. They're all tall. It doesn't matter. But, yes, shooting a basketball like he does, I mean, yeah, it's a lot easier for a kid my height at age 9 to develop an outside shot. Got to have a quick release and everything else because you don't have the physicality and you don't have the ability to go drive in among the trees with great regularity, right? I'm not going to say he doesn't do it, but the game is predicated on the three-point shot, and that's great. But when we're looking at an MVP, it doesn't matter what kind of cultural impact he's had. I'm talking about it on the court. I don't care that he sells more. You know, some of those bad looking shoes still sell. I don't care that his wife sells cookware. I don't care about Holy Moly. I do. I like it. But it doesn't matter when you're talking about an MVP. Right? And the Brooklyn guys all got hurt, so they eliminated themselves. Giannis is having another great year. But you know what? They're not going to give it to him a third time. So fine. Kick him out. Julius Randle, as you mentioned, and I'm doing nothing to try to elevate the Knicks. You talk about him. Embiid, I think he's missed too much time, but it's hard to discount what he's meant when he's on the court, right? Jason Tatum, you brought up before. You know my thoughts on Chris Paul. But to me, Jokic is the guy. Like, that's it.
And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Jokic winning. The thing that turned me on Jokic was, look at what the Nuggets did after Jamal Murray went out, right? And they lost one. They've lost one game. Two games?
Since yesterday Jamal was Murray's the second loss, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've been great. He's been terrific. You know, yeah, they lose a game to the Lakers where they're going, how did we lose that game? I mean, I don't understand how that happened.
That's one that I'd like to know how many things were broken.
Yeah,
in the locker room after that. Like, how do we lose to these guys?
I got a great story about someone breaking something in the locker room. I'll tell that. I'll tell that story. I got a great Lakers story about that from a bunch of years ago. I'll tell that story coming up next because that's a really good one. But that's what turned me around on Jokic was, okay, he's having a great year, but boy, Jamal Murray is terrific, man, and people don't understand how good he is. He got hurt, and it was, man, what can the Nuggets do? And I still look at them in the playoffs and go, eventually they're going to play a team that just has too much firepower for Jokic to be able to do it. And, you know, but that's the playoffs. I mean, regular season, they're still winning. They're, you know, it's not like they've slacked off at all. And I'm fine with it. If Jokic wins, he wins, right? If Embiid had not gotten hurt, then the Sixers would likely, A, have the East clinch by now. But I'm okay with it because, you know what, he did get hurt. He did miss a lot of time. If you want to give it to Jokic over Embiid, I'm okay with it. But clearly there's some line of demarcation where you got to say, okay, this is achievement, and okay, keeping a team afloat. I mean, really, that's what we can vote for MVP? Nah, can't do it. Twitter at How About a Fresca? Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. So I'll tell you that Laker story coming up in a couple minutes. It's really fun. But we got a big story out of the National Football League to get to, where one Hall of Fame quarterback is really upset with Aaron Rodgers. And I mean really upset with Aaron Rodgers. We'll break it down coming up next because it's so much fun right here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Oh!
A big night in the NBA. Steph goes for 37, but they lose. He can't be the MVP. Joining us now on the hotline for more on this and other huge stories, you can follow him on Twitter, at Rick Bucher, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports Radio analyst and insider extraordinaire, who right now is working on a very big piece for Fox Sports 1, a video essay on Julius Randle's MVP candidacy for the New York Knicks. Rick, what's happening?
I don't know how much time I have because that's going to take quite a bit of work. Is there a reason? Thank you for the background music, by the way. Were we jacking that up? Was that just my phone, or was that going about?
That's everybody. That's jacking you up.
Oh yeah. No, that's jacking you up. That's what it is. I mean, really. I mean, look, we had to have big music because the Knicks are going to finish with a winning record. I mean, nobody had that on NBA Bingo at the beginning of this season.
No, they definitely did not. But you know what I will say is, and we've been talking a lot about Julius Randle. When Scott Perry came over last year, I know obviously Leon Rose is running the show, bringing Tom Thibodeau in has had a big impact. But one of the things Scott Perry wanted to do when he came in was he wanted to create depth and toughness. And those two things are certainly hallmarks of what the Knicks have been. He just didn't have the right coach to get it done, but this wasn't like a one-year wonder. You know, you look at some of the guys, Randle included, like, they were here. These weren't new acquisitions. The drafting of R.J. Barrett, a lot of the pieces that they put together a year ago before Tibbs and Leon Rose showed up are proving to be big pieces of this Knicks iteration. So I just in looking at it, obviously Tibbs has a great chance of being the coach of the year. I don't know about Julius's MVP chances, to be honest with you. Even if my video wins, an Oscar. But that aside, I feel like Scott deserves a little bit of credit because the building blocks were in place for Tibbs to coach them up.
All right, so with the Knicks getting to the point where now I expect the Knicks to win every night, let's get to a team we don't expect to win every night, and that's the Lakers.
Yep.
Look how much things have changed. I expect the Knicks to go out and win because they're so good. After the win last night, AD thumps his chest and says, "We're back." Are the Lakers back?
I hope. The problem is that I know that Anthony Davis was serious. If he was joking, I would have really appreciated that. Like, you know what? We got off the schneid. We lost 6 out of 7. We won a damn game. Yahoo! Like, but let's not take this seriously. Like, we're really back. I mean, look, they scored 89 points. They outshot the Nuggets from three point range, which is not going to happen on a regular basis. And for me, it says more about the Nuggets than it does the Lakers. Yeah, the Nuggets were missing a number of guards. Lakers were missing LeBron and Schroeder. The defense was as good as it's ever been. We know that the Lakers have great defense. But offensively, 93 points, and Talen Horton Tucker is icing the game with a putback underneath Jokic. That, to me, is not the recipe that is going to win you a championship. Do I think they could still put it together if they get LeBron back healthy and Schroeder? Sure. But last night didn't demonstrate anything to me. In fact, and I've been saying this all year, when they first made some of the changes that they did, getting Matthews and Montrezl Harrell, we were thinking Marc Gasol, who had a rare – great performance last night, or good performance. We thought, wow, they're even better than they were last year. And those pieces have not worked out. And we have seen that in the absence of Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Those additional pieces were supposed to improve them. I would say that, missing Rondo and missing Dwight Howard, they were better last year. And I did not think that when they made the moves last summer. But that is proving to be true.
All right, the ankle, a problem for LeBron. He's reportedly going to miss the next couple of games, Clippers and the Blazers. But by missing those games, he's going to be perilously close to playing in those play-in rounds that he hates so much.
Yeah.
You're with me on this, I think.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I it's awfully self-serving for LeBron or Doncic or Mark Cuban, who actually voted for the play-in games, to adopt the play-in games.
Yep.
Now, I like the idea. I mean, this is basically what these guys are saying. I like the idea of the play-in games. I just don't want to play in the play-in games. It's like, no. You don't get to choose it. I'd like somebody that we're playing to play in the play-in game, and then we'll play them. But I don't actually want to play in the play-in games. Look, it's the ratings have been suffering. This, by all indications, has made these games more competitive, more meaningful down the stretch. It was supposed to be an anti-tanking measure. It has served as that. You've got teams, 11 deep that are still trying to win games with a handful of games left. 2 years ago, prior to this, we had the Kings – 9 games behind the 8th-seeded Clippers? The season was meaningless with 2 weeks to go. So I love this thing. And I did say, when LeBron and AD were hurt and we were trying to figure out when they were going to get back, that they were going to face this dilemma. Do they bring them back and try to play them big minutes so that they avoid the play-in game? Or do they ease them back in and risk the danger of having to play in the play-in games? Now, when I look at who they're going to play, there's nobody there that I believe should scare them. And if they're in the 7th seed, they've got a the seventh spot. They've got to lose two games in order to not make the playoffs. And in one way, I could see where it actually, and this is the Lakers way, right? Feels like the bubble was this case last year. I could see where it actually benefits them to come in through the back door. If it means that they're matching up with a Phoenix Suns team who this iteration has never won a series together. You know, Devin Booker never been in the playoffs. So you're suddenly going to be faced with a team that's very young, does have Chris Paul, has done some great regular season things, but postseason completely different. I mean, looking at the teams that they could potentially play, I would much rather play the Phoenix Suns if I'm the Lakers than the Denver Nuggets, fully healthy, or the Clippers, certainly. And so they may actually, if they slide into the play-in games, may actually end up being a benefit for them.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon, Rick Bucher with us here. You know, from there, let's get to a guy who starts to, you know, whenever we say his name, people kind of roll their eyes and go, yeah, he was great, but look at Leah. You think about all the things that didn't work out for him and where he is in his career, but last night we watched Carmelo Anthony hit the top 10 in scoring in NBA history for a guy that's got a college national championship and three gold medals and, yeah. You know, a lot of his career. I get it that it's kind of a punchline a bit because he couldn't win. He didn't play defense. He jumped around the league. But you want to talk about what he's achieved. People want to say, hey, Steph Curry's a great scorer. Look at what he's done. Steph Curry is 9,000 points behind Carmelo Anthony, and he's not catching him. In his NBA career, Steph is not going to catch Melo. And it's time to understand what a surefire Hall of Famer that Carmelo Anthony is going to wind up being when it's said and done.
He absolutely is a Hall of Famer. And the unfortunate thing is I put at least some of the downfall or the dissatisfaction with Carmelo Anthony's career on the people that were the architects of the teams that he played on. Because when he played in Denver and when he could just be a scorer and he didn't have to be the leader, when he was there with Chauncey Billups, that was when he was at his best. And now that he's with Portland, again, he's at his best. The idea that he would go into New York and be the guy, be the leader, and you had your owner, Jim Dolenyo, giving away the entire farm in order to get him. Like, they had a nice little squad, and Dolan gave up every single asset in order to get Melo. And so it was all resting on his shoulders. And he's a great talent. He's a great scorer. What he's not is a team leader. And there were too many years in his career where he was placed in the position of having to be that. And we were left wanting. But look, I saw him when he came in. He was a better all-around player when he arrived than LeBron James was. Had a more complete game, was more skilled. LeBron James would tell you that. It's simply Carmelo didn't evolve, and LeBron ultimately did. But the talent and the accomplishments overall, you know, you gotta pay some respect to Carmelo. And to your point, without question, winning a championship at Syracuse, basically being the guy to win that championship, and then playing on some pretty good Nuggets teams, and just his longevity as a scorer, he's certainly in the Hall of Fame.
Well, he made gold medals too. Career.
He's got three gold medals too, and yes, he did make Jim Boeheim's career, which I'll always be very appreciative of him for.
That's the one he got. All right, last one for you, Rick. Going back, we talked a little bit of the Knicks and their building and all of that. That's Jason's world. For me, we have to go to the fact that they lost to the Pelicans tonight. Did Steph Curry lose the MVP tonight?
It wasn't his to lose, but. You know, this is the difficulty that I have with Steph, because he is right now, he's just been the most exciting, entertaining player in the league, I think without question. And yet that doesn't mean you're the most winning or you're the most excellent. I mean, I get the sense that there are people out there who think that this is the best Steph Curry has ever been. And it's not by a long shot. In the, 14, 15, 15, 16, first couple, that was when he was a scorer and he was an efficient playmaker and he was playing better defense than he is now. Obviously, defense collectively, you need a team around you that plays good defense to be able to do that. But nonetheless, his all-around game was far better then. What's exciting is, and some of it's by necessity, is that, the light is whatever, like shamrock green, and it's never turned off. So he can shoot from anywhere at any time, and it's electric to see him put down some of these shots. But the reality is it's all resulted in a 500 record. And I was having this conversation with several GMs because I said the numbers this season are so over the top. Like, how do you judge whether a guy's actually playing better than he did previously, whether he's improved? Like, what the numbers mean? How do you divine that? And to a man, every one of them said, look at the team record. If the numbers aren't reflected in winning, then the numbers are suspect. And so, in part, not to downgrade what Steph's doing, because I love that he's back healthy and only he can shoot the way that he can shoot, but it's amounted to a team that is 500. So I have to keep all of this in context.
You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Bucher. That is at Rick Bucher. And don't forget the book Rebound, written Brian Grant's NBA career, about his life battling Parkinson's and finding what really matters. The book's doing great, Rick. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And by the way, Steph Curry, you're no Julius Randle, yo.
Look at that. That's a walk-off moment right there.
Hey, Rick's next book on the rookie season of Emmanuel Quickly will be coming out at the end of the...
Quickly to the remainder's bin.
Yes. thanks a bunch, buddy. As always, we'll talk to you next week.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
Yo.
So before I get to my Lakers story, I just got to know this. How did the Suns beat the Cavaliers by 16 in overtime? How do you win by 16 in a game that went to overtime? They outscored Cleveland 20-4 in overtime to win. That's like mathematically impossible to score 20 points in 5 minutes.
Nah, you just start boat racing, a couple of turnovers, and away you go. Great game. My Suns now up to 47-18.
Look at that. Unbelievable. Big night for them. 23 for Chris Paul, 16 assists in the win for Phoenix. All right, so I promised this story earlier this hour. This is a 20-year-old Shaq and Kobe story, but it's one of my favorites all time. And I don't know how many people know this story, because you talked about breaking stuff earlier this hour when you were really pissed off about stuff in sports. So I'm going back to, this is the year before the Lakers won the championship for the first time with Shaq and Kobe. They wound up losing. They got swept by the Spurs. And this is back when I'm producing at KABC here in Los Angeles. I was the 11 o'clock sports producer. Bill Weir, who is now, big star in news, was the sports anchor. So he and I and our cameraman went to you know, and went with the travel with the Lakers and travel with the team to San Antonio for their series against the Spurs. So the first game goes and the Spurs win, and Shaq was really mad. Like, he was, you know, he felt he was getting physicaled all night long and wasn't getting the calls. So, you know, the game ends and you see the players walk into the locker room. And what you don't see is, you know, because the cameras are right there, is the camera angle you get of the cameras watching the players walk into the locker room. That's where all the media stands before we get to go into the locker room and ask them questions. And there's usually a 5 or 7 to 10 minute cooling off period before we go in and get to go talk to the players. So we're standing outside, you know, the Alamo Dome is going crazy, the Spurs just won, they're playing their music, and we're waiting to go in, and all of a sudden, we hear this big crash, and we're like, what the hell just happened? And I'm wondering, well, you know, what it could be. And I think back, and I go, I think I know what that was. And I remember earlier in the day when we had gone in for pregame for the 6 o'clock show, like you walk right into the visitors' locker room and there's like a little room and then there's a bigger room where the locker room is. And right smack dab in the middle of the locker room was a TV and VCR set up, right, because it's that long ago. And Derek Fisher is watching video. And I'm like, this is set up in a really weird and awkward place. What the hell, man? You know, why is this right? We're all walking around him to sit down. It's like, this is where you're sitting to watch, you know, watch video. So I go, I wonder if that was, oh, someone just knocked it over. Oh, boy. So we go into the locker room, and they finally let us in, and it's frantic. Like, people are trying to clean up these pieces, and this VCR is just shattered into, like, so many pieces. We're like, what happened? What happened? And what I heard was, and this plays out in the rest of the story, what we heard was that Shaq was so mad he came in, he picked up that VCR, and he just smashed it on the ground into all those pieces, right? So we're like, oh, my God, oh, my God. So we're like, that's amazing. So we're trying to ask, you know, we're like, all right, what do we do? We wanted to try to do something fun with it, but clearly it's a very, you know, tough locker room because, you know, the Lakers are mad. They just lost the game. So the next day we go in, you know, for pregame and, you know, we're interviewing Kobe. And there's a bunch of people standing around Kobe, and he's talking about the game. And they say, you know, what can you do from game one to game two? And he said, well, you know, we got to go back. We got to look at some film and then see where we're at. And then Bill Weir just shouts out on the VCR from last night, and nobody says anything. And we're like, oh. And Kobe goes, oh, man, that thing is broke to hell, man. That thing's not coming back. She was like, oh, my God.
Play the tap song for that.
I mean, so that, I mean, clearly, I mean, I can't tell you, it was like walking in and seeing these, hear these people, you know, in polo shirts just cleaning up all these little bits and pieces of a VCR.
Wow, it's frantically saying, why did you open that door? Like, that's the problem, right? Is dude, they were probably yelling, we need another minute. We need another minute. Now it was 10. And you probably have one of the long-tenured guys, I don't know, maybe a Jim Hill or somebody that's saying, that's 10 minutes. I have
10 minutes.
Go
you got to open. We got to go in. We got to go in. Look, everybody.
Like
why?
It was, you know, presidential order, something from the governor.
You're opening that locker room so we can get in there. We got to find out what smack. And the thing is, everybody saw it and just walked around it. Like, it was, oh, okay, there we go. And nobody's like, oh my God, dude, this thing just got smashed to smithereens. And I wish I could have been a fly on the wall to see what happened when we walked in there. I mean, that was a story that everybody told. And then Kobe just said, yeah, you know, that thing's broke. That's not coming back, man.
It's broke.
Yeah. And then we did try to do a bit where we went to a VCR shop to buy a new VCR for the Lakers, and they didn't want to let us in to do it. Yeah, they didn't want to let us in, though. They're like, no, we don't know about this with your TV cameras. Oh, okay.
Thinking that you may have, you know, done something inappropriate.
Yeah. Twitter, and how about a Fresca, Mike at Swollen Dome. Nothing was done. That was not me. It did not smash any VCR. Did not do it. Not me. Can't prove it. Coming up next, hey, we got some big stories out of Major League Baseball to get to. How about fans chanting blank the Astros tonight? That's next, Fox.